Before I talk about this next one, I have to tell you I'm a vegan. So, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the kind of film that has me asking myself, do I actually like horror films, or do I just hate myself? It also had me asking, what if this giant abattoir had a robust workers' union? Maybe then we wouldn't have so many dead teenage hippies. Only one of whom actually gets chainsaw massacred, for the record. Chapter 2. Communism was just a red herring. Okay, yes, that one was a joke about Clue, which is not technically a horror film. Just let me have this one. Let's talk about class. Silence of the Lambs, which definitely is a horror film, and you can fight me on that, draws from the same well as Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Both are part of the cultural mythos surrounding the Ed Gein murders. Lambs, especially, uses Buffalo Bill's class to construct his otherness, his affront to polite sensibilities, by dressing his home in squalor and clutter, to contrast Hannibal Lecter's clean upper-class minimalism, and emphasising the vulgarity of his crimes rather than the seriousness of them. Hannibal's cell is pointedly styled to look more like a vampiric aristocrat's castle than a prison facility, marking him as a different class of monster. He may eat people, but at least he knows how to pair his wines. Similarly, the family in Texas Chainsaw Massacre embody the worst assumptions about poverty in rural America. It is perhaps a reflection of how America views the working class as synonymous with the labour they provide, that the only imaginable future for these meat industry professionals whom mechanisation left behind is to still perform the labour of cattle slaughter, but on some teenagers. They eat and sell human meats because they can't afford livestock. What's more, the family name is Sawyer, an occupation name meaning one who saws. Their work comprises their entire identity and history. Consider, for contrast, Franklin Hardesty, their victim with the most apparent ties to the local area, who is named after an old family surname, as we learn from reference to the Franklin house, his and Sally's childhood home, just across the field from the Sawyer house. Franklin's parents used his given name to pass on an inheritance, while Leatherface and the Hitchhiker, as they're listed in the credits, only have a career to inherit, and by the events of the film they've both been made redundant. The class antagonism is palpable. Although, while a Marxist reading is eminently possible, it needs must be remarked that the intersectional classism and ableism of this impoverished family with varied, ambiguous developmental disorders being depicted that way to make them more scary, is deeply unkind and unhelpful to how both these groups are perceived in the real world. There is, however, an illustrious history of radical class-conscious horror. John Carpenter's delightfully unsubtle They Live has some particularly remarkable camera work and editing. It's one of distressingly few films to frame homeless characters with compassion and dignity. In the same vein, The People Under the Stairs confirms for us what we knew all along. The real monster is your landlord, who can be defeated through community-led rent strike. And maybe blowing up some dynamite in their Scrooge McDuck money pit, which all landlords have. The class struggle in domestic spheres is played much more seriously in 2020 Oscar winner Parasite, where any sympathy for the wealthy haunted house resident Mrs. Park is lost when she delights in how the storm that destroyed the Kim family's home means that the weather is perfect for her son's birthday. Inevitably, the party ends in disaster when someone is smashed over the head with a symbolic rock representing prosperity. Hey, remember when I made the throwaway joke in episode 1 about Ellen Ripley working in STEM? It wasn't a joke, it was foreshadowing. Let's talk about Alien. Now, despite being set in space, Alien really has nothing to do with the sci-fi genre as it was understood in the 1970s. The Nostromo isn't a spaceship in the same way that the Enterprise is a spaceship. The room full of chains and dripping water is a set piece that establishes the mise-en-scene as visually analogous to a mid-century submarine or ship's hold. Moreover, Jones the Cat is a visual clue to the audience that we are meant to understand the ship the way we would understand a relatively low-tech cargo ship on Earth, complete with a ship's cat, to catch the space mice. My point here is that there is a unity established between the working class in the audience and on screen, because the events of Alien are ultimately the fault of the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. We see this explicitly in the mission statement telling Ripley the crew is expendable, but also implicitly. The ship is meant to have two escape pods, but the crew was sent into deep space with one of them non-functional. If the corporation had taken proper measures to repair it, it's entirely possible that the whole crew, except poor John Hurt, could have survived. And if I can just get on my soapbox for a minute, if anyone had listened to Ripley about the quarantine procedure, they wouldn't have had a xenomorph loose on the ship. The mundane truth of the matter is that the biggest threat in the workplace is the owning class cutting corners on health and safety regulations. And in a workplace culture where loyalty to a faceless company is prized above all, maybe we could all learn something from Parker's insistence that following the signal to the egg cluster isn't what they're being paid to do.